Now I will hand it over to Bill, who will introduce our speaker for tonight.
Hey, thanks everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Uncle Bill, I guess. There's no Uncle Jim here tonight, so you're just going to have to deal with that. Hey, it is really a great pleasure of mine to introduce tonight's speaker tonight. She's a friend. She's become a friend. She's become a really important part of my home group, and I'll tell you about that. We kind of created a new deal during noontime. We wanted to make sure that people had a safe place to meet at noon, and it turns out that our speaker tonight and several of her friends were also doing something like that in Hanford. And we combined forces, and we've got a heck of a great noon meeting that's been going on Zoom with the Valley Group. So maybe you'll get to learn a little bit still more about tonight's speaker if you join us for that. Tonight, we're going to be listening to Chris. Chris has 17 days, 11 months, and 5 years of sobriety. You know what that makes her? Yep. That's right. It makes her an April Fool. She got sober on the 1st of April in 2015. She likes to think that coincidences are God's way of staying anonymous. The step that seems to have had the biggest impact in her life and her recovery, which I'm sure we'll hear about, is step 9. And she really enjoys taking her sponsees through all 12 steps. She has served as a... Now, I thought I read this wrong. She said she served as a breeder. But then I think it was maybe autocorrect got in her way, and she meant greeter. She's been a group greeter, a greeter coordinator, in fact, and a group secretary. And also, believe it or not, folks, there are people in AA who have trusted her with money. She's been a treasurer with an AA group. So, hey, that's enough silliness out of me. Please welcome my friend Chris.
Thanks, Uncle Bill. My name is Chris, and I am an alcoholic. Uncle Bill, for those that you remember, reminds me of Family Affair, so I don't think I can call you Uncle Bill. showing my age there, but thank you for inviting me. You know, this has been a long time, and I'm going to share this because it kind of came to my mind the other day. Is, you know, before I actually knew Bill, he had reached out. I think this is about three and a half years ago. I had gotten this message, and it didn't say what it was for. And I had asked my sponsor, and I know Suzanne, and I said, well, Bill called me. He goes, and she said, oh, well, he coordinates the speakers. I'm like, oh, God, really? And I thought, well, I don't want to do that. And so I remember thinking, God, I got to call him back. Oh, I conveniently forgot. So if I owe you an amends, I apologize. I ran, you know, because I do know how to do that. But then right before COVID, and this is funny, Suzanne had texted me and said, would I be willing to be a speaker? And I said, you know, I'm going to be coming up in 5 years, but, you know, I'm not ready yet. You know, I'm just not ready yet, but, you know, when I turn 5, maybe I will. And so I was able to be a little more honest. I could speak my truth. And sure enough, right after that, I got invited on Zoom to do a 20-minute speaker in L.A., which, okay, got through that. And then I think, is it the Sunday night? I did like a 30-minute, and now this is, I think, 40. So the God of my understanding gets to ramp me up a little bit, get me a little bit prepared. So, and that's what I learned here. And I learned here it's progress, not perfection. So I run at one time. I learn to be a little bit more honest, and, you know, I get to step up when I can. So, and I love that. I learn all that from this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, and it's funny. God, I don't even feel all that nervous. I kept praying because, you know, I don't know about you, but my head can do a lot of running in its head. I can live my whole life and all the people that are in it and have conversations with you over and over incessantly. And, you know, I told myself, I said, you know, I'm going to say, God, I'm excited to do this. I'm excited to do this. And you know what? I slept well. I didn't obsess on this. And you know what? That's God working for me, doing what I can't do for myself. And I find some of those tools. I'm just amazed at that. Every day I am just more amazed at the miracles that happen in my life. You know, today I actually got to go to lunch with some beautiful AA women, one who was celebrating 24 years today, two other ones that I've just gotten to get to know. And what a miracle and a wonderful day it was. You know, my life, my reality today is worth being in, you know. I grew up in a a single parent, my mom, with my grandma. I didn't have a dad. So I always felt different. I'm just kind of less than, you know, everybody else had a dad. And I was like, wow, that was kind of, and my family, we didn't talk about stuff, right? It was that stoic Italian family. We didn't have feelings. We didn't have conversations about stuff. And so I was just always just uncomfortable. I was just uncomfortable. I didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. Kind of like that wallflower, but I just so wanted to be a part of, you know? And I grew up in the, you know, 61. I was born in 61. So, you know, in those times you'd go out to dinner or something like that. And, you know, somebody was allowed to have a drink. Oh, would you like a sip? Well, of course, you know, I like doing that. They take, you know, they were sweet drinks. So I enjoyed that. And I saw adults doing those things, you know, and, you know, I'm an only child and I want to be that adult. You know, I want to grow up, I guess. You know, I want to fit in and be a part of it. And one thing I kind of remember when I was little, and I can't remember how old it was, but I remember my mom being around some friends, and they were obviously drinking. And I don't know if there was, my mom was an alcoholic. I'm not sure, but we certainly had a lot of isms. But I remember there being some drunk people and her turning to somebody and saying, oh, yeah, she knows what drunk is. She was proud. She was proud that I knew what that was, you know, so that meant something. Oh, that's a good thing, you know. And so here I'm sort of learning, you know, all this stuff that's sort of making my foundation of that drinking is a good thing, you know. And so, let's see. So, gosh, I lost my train of thought there. So when I got to high school, and I started drinking when I was probably, well, like I said, I had sips all through when I was younger. Actually, I remember being asked, I think it was like a funeral or something like that, and somebody asked me if I wanted to drink, I don't know. And of course, being that, you know, that, oh yeah, I'm going to fit in, I'm going to be big. Yeah, oh yeah, I can have that. And I remember taking a few drinks, I think it was a beer, and I probably had like two, three sips, and I blacked out. I'm sure I blacked out, you know, but I was trying to be that big person. And, you know, it was right at that time that I'm sure I knew that that was how you fit in with people, you know. And so when I went to high school and it was on, you know, I started drinking at 13, 14 years old, you know, and all those little side dishes. And I came out of myself. I didn't feel so awkward. I didn't feel so uncomfortable. I didn't feel like, you know, I couldn't participate and have conversations with people. I was just that really awkward, uncomfortable person. And drinking brought me out of that. It gave me a way of not having that anxiety or those fears. And what it also did is it pushed me to that extreme that I just did whatever. You know, I was up for that, whatever was going on. And so, like I said, I had a lot of, you know, side dishes are a big part of my story. And what I've learned is the side dishes that I used helped me drink a lot. I could drink a lot. I could just keep drinking because, you know, I was one of those people that wanted to have the party go on forever. You know, I didn't want it to ever end because then I guess life would start happening and then I would be uncomfortable, you know. So I remember in high school, and here's how I qualify. I mean, I was 15 and I had alcohol poisoning. You know, and I only know that later when I look back, but I mean, I just drank. I mean, I was one of those, when I started, I couldn't stop. I went to oblivion, you know, and when I grew up between LA and Brooklyn, and I spent every summer since I was six in Brooklyn and my family there, and then I moved and went to high school in Brooklyn, and it was 18 to drink when I was there, and so we were 15 and we were all in the bars, and man, was that fun. In fact, it happened such that, you know, my mom had said that, I would be able to go, you know, to high school. And so I really, really wanted to go. She met my stepdad. She married him. I think I was 10. And I wasn't sure if that was going to happen. But I had already felt some sense of independence by going out there. And I really, really wanted to go. And I think that was a big part of that. Once I got there, man, it was party on. I mean, you could get around the subways, you know, going to the bars. I mean, there was one night and it was a storm and it was ice out there. And they had this thing called car service, which is pre-Uber. And we took car service. There was nobody in that bar, but we were going to the bar, you know. I mean, it didn't matter, you know. And I was also one of those people that certainly I had to drink before I went out to drink. Because I wanted to make sure I had enough. And the bars in New York, they were open till 4 in the morning, you know. And so you know, I was an okay student. I did pretty good. But, you know, I could certainly see that as I started out as a freshman, by the time I graduated, you know, I was, you know, probably like a 3.8. I got some awards. By the time I got out of there, I was like a 3.2. I was taking AP classes, but I didn't finish those because drinking and partying became more important to me. But I did go to college. I moved from New York to San Diego, went to San Diego State, and I thought, oh God, it was like starting over. I didn't know anybody there, right? All my high school people are in New York, and my friends that I developed. And here's kind of a side note. One of my best friends from high school that I partied with is also in this program. You know what I mean? And this place, this program is everywhere, everywhere. I love that. But so I moved to San Diego, and I'm like, oh God. But I'll tell you, I don't know what it is, but we attract each other. And I found my people. I found my people, you know, and I party back on, you know. And now it's 21 to drink here, but you know, there's ways. We know ways of finding out, you know, where we can get that, you know. So, and again, drinking and partying was a hell of a lot more of a priority to me than going to school. So, I was going to school for engineering. I actually got to a place I was doing okay. I think after my second semester, I was on academic probation already. You know, I kind of did what I needed to do to get off of that. And then I was actually taking a summer school class, and my stepdad passed away. And he became a very important person in my life, because unlike my Italian Stoic family, he actually had conversations, and he was emotional and connected. So it was a very big deal for me. He was only in my life for about 10 or 12 years, but he became a very important person, which is crazy, because at first when he came into my life, I was very angry and irritated because he was taking my mom away. So it's amazing how our relationships develop. But I'll tell you, when he passed, party on. I mean, it was just one more reason, right, to just have an excuse, because, you know, not that I needed an excuse, but it's certainly, man, I think it, and that was, probably, it was in 84, so I was probably like 23, and I didn't come into these rooms until I was 38. I don't know how I made it that long. I really don't know. I mean, there was some crazy stuff. There was a few times actually in my drinking career that I kind of thought, I think maybe I have a problem, you know, and I'm asking the people around me, and, you know, I like to hang out with people like me, right? Because I didn't feel as bad. In fact, if you drank more than me, I could feel better that I wasn't that bad. So, and of course I would ask them, and they say, oh no, there's no problem. I'm like, okay, all right, no problem. I'll keep going on, you know? I used to be proud. In high school, I remember, you know, we'd be out drinking. I could pull my hair up, throw up on the curb, get back into drinking. I mean, I was proud of stuff like that. You know, that's the kind of person that I was, you know. I strived for the worst, I guess. I don't know. But so I had a few episodes. I think there were two times that I actually thought that maybe I had a problem. And then I had this experience at work. And I didn't finish college. But I had already gotten a job. I'd gotten a job as an engineering tech, but I had enough classes. I was almost a senior with a 2.0 GPA, I think. But I'd gotten a job, Department of Defense job. And so I was able to work in my career, even though I didn't finish my degree. And honestly, that was always a source of self-esteem for me, you know, because I felt like I was lying and cheating, you know, but even though I met the criteria, in fact, I think I was definitely hungover and drunk and high when I went and asked the chief engineer, I'd like to get a job. I have enough credentials here. Can you hire me? And shit, they didn't do it. You know, I'll tell you, God does for you, but you can't, what you can do for yourself. I really believe that. When I look back on stuff and how my life went, I have no idea. You know, I certainly was driving drunk. I should have killed somebody. I could have been in jail. I mean, there's all kinds of things, but that is not my path. That was not my path. I don't know why. And so I got to have a job in my career, you know, and I spent 38 years. I just retired, gosh, 2 years this month, 38, a little over 38 plus years. I started while I was still in college of a career. And, you know, I drank for most of that. I went to Catholic high school, the best parties going on there, and on the military bases. I'll tell you, I was in all the right places to be the person I was. You know what? We could go drink at work because there was the officers club, there was the EM club, and of course at work I found people like me too. And I used to travel a lot for work, and the first place we'd go is we'd go to the bar. I loved traveling for work because it was a day travel, get there, go to the bar, just have some meetings, all stuff, go drinking afterwards, and then fly home, and the whole week was about drinking and coming home, and, you know, and I get paid for that. I loved that. You know, I lived for that stuff. I actually, there was a period of time where I was doing some work, And, of course, I'm partying, and I'm in a situation where there's this investigation going on, and I'm participating with DCIS people and FBI, and I'm starting to get nervous and just paranoid or whatever. And it so happened that I wound up having a breakdown, basically. I was so afraid of what I was doing in my life that these people might know, and I'm with them, you know. So I'm out of work for like 10 months, and I'm thinking, and I'm not drinking. I'm not drinking, but I'm on doing other things. And wouldn't you know, after all that was done, I came back in and I started right back where I was. And God, that must have been, that was 95. And I still had 5 more years of drinking. I mean, I don't know how I made it through this. But what happened to me is I was in a job. I worked out of San Diego. I was living in San Diego. But I had there was a program that I was being supporting up here in Lemoore. And so I came up here. And I'm partying, I'm in a relationship, I'm cheating, of course, because that's what I do. I'm a cheater, I do that. I'm going because I want what I want the way I want it, and it doesn't matter what anybody else, you know, how that might affect other people. And I'm up here, and all of a sudden, my world just comes crashing down. I never consider myself going to the liquor store and buying alcohol. But all of a sudden I'm up here and I'm going to buy alcohol. I'm thinking everybody's looking at me. They know what I'm doing. I'm going to buy just like soda through Jack in the Box because I'm so paranoid and I think everybody knows that I'm going to just go home and just drink. And then, I'm cheating on my husband, and all of a sudden I start getting this call from the guy I'm cheating with, his wife, and I'm thinking, oh my God, you know. So all of a sudden I believe, what I really believe, is God is starting to show me who I am, because I'm having to drink more and more because I don't like who I am. I don't like all these behaviors that I'm doing, but I can't help myself. You know what I mean? What do they say in the book? It talks about our instincts gone awry, right? That it's all about me. And I believe that this was an opportunity, that God brought me into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was up here, and I went back to San Diego, and I was like, man, I mean, I think this was the third time I realized, like, I got a problem here. And here's what God did for me. I called my boss, I think it was probably like 2 or 3 in the morning, told him I think I have a drug and alcohol problem. Well, now, you know, I'm working for the government. He's got to do something. So now I've just done something that's going to make me have to do something about this problem that I have. And so I do an outpatient program. It was I guess they call it an IOP now. It's 3 nights a week. And I'm still working. I'm still traveling. And I'll tell you, I'm very blessed. I'm very blessed for the job that I have. Because they put you in the safe harbor, so I didn't lose my job. I went through this outpatient program, which was amazing. They required you to go to 12-step programs. And the crazy thing is, when I was in high school, I hated English, and I took this class, Alcohol and Literature. And the nun was an out-recovering alcoholic, and she had mentioned, you know, there's this meeting, like, in the basement, you know, that, you know, you guys might want to check out. And I'm thinking, oh, no, I'm gonna checking that out. And that was the first time I ever heard Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't remember any of that, but I remember once I got into sobriety, her saying stuff. I said, oh, she's probably talking about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was, what, 15 or 16 years old. And it took me till I was 38. And then it starts all connecting. You know, it starts all that God, that coincidence, you know, God staying anonymous. I love that, like Bill said. That is one of my favorite sayings, you know, because I can look back at my life and I could just see all these things happening. And to me, that's the God of my understanding, putting me in the right place, you know. And so what's crazy is, you know, I grew up Italian Catholic, but I wasn't really much into the church because, you know, I was doing all kinds of shit they said not to do. So it made me feel worse. And I don't want to hear about that stuff. I didn't dislike God. I didn't think, you know, I was going to be, you know, I don't think that he hated me, but I certainly didn't think he liked me. But I certainly knew I didn't like me because I knew these were the things I would like to be, you know. And so when I go in to get my to the doctors for my outpatient program stuff, and it was right. So this is in 2000. In 2000 in April is when I first got sober. And so it is around Easter. And this is just crazy, just some crazy stuff. And I'll never forget this. You know, I think that's why it happened this way, because God gave me stuff that I won't forget, because I'm a forgetter. I'll forget stuff. And so I went into the doctors, and I remember having the nurses pray with me. I wasn't a person that said prayers. I had them say the Our Father, which, of course, I couldn't remember all of it, but I didn't do that. I called and left a message on the voice message up here in my office saying, you've got to believe. I don't know what all this crazy shit is going on, but I can look back and say, that's God. That's God coming into my life in some crazy way. But, you know, it was meant to be, you know. I got a sponsor, my first sponsor in San Diego. She was actually a woman that I worked with. She used to tell me about these women's meetings that they would have, and I should come once in a while. I was like, yeah, you know, I just really wasn't into it. And I didn't know that it was AA, and I just remember calling her, and because they said in the recovery program I had to find a sponsor. I said, well, I'm going to ask this woman. You know, so I asked her, will you be my sponsor? Sure enough, she was an Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, again, God guiding me, doing what I can't do for myself, you know. And I'm not scared of all this stuff. I'm just kind of doing the next indicated step without realizing that's what I'm doing. I remember one night, right at the beginning of there, starting the outpatient program, and I remember going to sleep, and I never said prayers. And there was this one prayer that you said as a kid, and it's, now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. And if I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. And I prayed that night, and if I swear, the next morning when I woke up, I felt different. I just felt different. That was actually the time where that obsession was relieved, and I really believe that there was this death of this old person, and this new person was coming in, you know. Again, I only know all this stuff looking back at it. I don't know it at the time that it's happening. You know, I have to start learning about myself. So I worked my steps. I went through the steps with my sponsor. I traveled back and forth from up here, and it became an opportunity for my husband and I at the time to move up here, which was probably a good idea because the guy I was cheating on was the guy living across the street. So it actually made a really good opportunity for us to move up here. And he actually worked in the same place I did, and they had a job for him up here up at Lemoore. And, you know, and here's a crazy thing. And I said before, I don't know if Bill said it, I texted it to him. So I love doing all the steps with my sponsees, but 9 is a particularly good step. And there is a reason why they are later on. Because one of the things I did when I first got into recovery is I told my husband that I was cheating. You don't do that. That's not what amends are. Amends are not going and relieving yourself of your burdens. You know what I mean? I didn't know that. I know that now. The crazy thing is that man and I are not together today, but we are still close. We are wonderfully close friends, and I'm good friends with his wife today. So it's amazing that that relationship is like that. I mean, how I treated this person was horrendous. You know what I mean? But there are reasons for these steps, and I know that today. I know that today. So we moved up here. So that was about 2000, 2001. And I'm going to meetings, and I get connected, and I found a sponsor. I kind of went back and forth through different sponsors, and at some point I realized, you know what, I don't think that this relationship is really working. You know what I mean? It was, so I asked my husband for a divorce, and then, because I'm wanting to go on to a different relationship, because I had met somebody. But I was honest. It was a conversation with my husband or whatever. But I realized that I was going to let go of this, and I was going to move on to this other one, because it had probably been something that had been coming for a while, but I wasn't able to look at that. But I remember talking to my sponsor in San Diego and her giving me some information. I'm like, well, no. I want to do this. I didn't say that to her. I want to do this. So I'm having some self-will starting to happen, right? And this happens to be a relationship with a woman. And so now I'm not wanting to go into the rooms and share all this stuff because my life is changing in a way where I don't really want to be open about it. I'm recognizing in a way, now looking in hindsight, that I'm starting to run on some self-will. I'm running on some self-will, and I don't want to bring that in the room. So I get about 7 years sober. I got divorced. I'm in this relationship. I stopped going to meetings. I don't need to go to meetings, you know. And I have 7 long years of not drinking, no God, no AA, just physical dry. And it was painful. It was the most painful part in my life, because I wasn't numbing anything. My character defects were just popping out all over. Talk about control. That woman the other night, I heard her say, large and in charge. Oh, my God. I was humongous and in charge. At least that's what I thought I was. And it was the most, it was a toxic relationship, but I was going to have what I was going to have, right? And, but one of the most amazing things that I got in that relationship, I got a lot of things. I think everything in my life happens for a reason. If I'm willing to look at those things, is I never had children. She had a daughter who I helped raise from the age of 3 and a half to about 15. And Bill didn't mention it, but one of my greatest impacts of steps was step 9. It was the amends I wound up making to my stepdaughter. But so I'm living through this dry drunk, and now I'm far enough away from anything that says not drinking. I don't have any obsession to drink. But my wife at the time then decides she's going to go out. And I think she's already drinking and I don't really know about it. And I'm so far away that I'm like, okay, I guess I'll have a drink. So right after 14 years, I picked up a drink. And you know what? I didn't want that drink. But you know what it was about for me? It was about fitting in again. It was about fitting in, being part of, because I was so far away from having any desire to be a better person. You know, I was just existing again. When I came in here the first time, I was existing. I was just existing. So I picked up a drink that I didn't even want. And you know why that's so important to me today? Because that's God reminding me, you're an alcoholic. You didn't even want that drink and you picked it up because you want to be a part of. You know, that's so important to you. And so I drink. But I don't get drunk because I shared with you I had those side dishes. I was so afraid that if I got drunk, because, you know, we get uninhibited, that I might then chase those side dishes. And I thought, oh, my God, I thought I almost had that break from reality when I first came in. I was really afraid of that. I really think today that was alcohol detox a lot more than I realized that crazy stuff that happened. And so I was afraid. So I spent a little under a year controlled drinking. And in our book, when it talks about control and enjoy your drinking, I know what that is. If I'm controlling it, I am not enjoying it at all because it's painful. I'm an alcoholic. I want to drink to get drunk. I want to be in oblivion. That's where it's fun. Who wouldn't want to be? Who drinks taking a sip? You know what I mean? I don't get that. So I controlled it and I didn't enjoy it, you know, and I don't know. And I wound up back in these rooms because I came back in because my wife was having a horrible time. And actually, you know what? As I look back, it was progressing a little bit for me. It was just progressing a little bit for me. I could see that eventually I was going to just drink a little bit more and I was going to get right back to the place I was. You know, I had a very hard time sharing that for a long time because I thought, oh my God, it's not like the book. The book says when you go back out, it gets worse. You know, maybe there were pieces of that. If I really look at that, it probably was worse in a lot of ways. I take that reading as that it got worse and I drank more. I think my life was just worse anyway. So I can share that today because I heard somebody else share that. You know, if you stick around here long enough, you'll hear your story. You'll hear. If you listen to the similarities, and I'll tell you, today I hear so many more similarities than I ever did, you know, because I'm willing to hear that and because I get to learn and grow from that, you know. So I came back in here, and I found the sponsor that I have today. And the crazy thing is that, so my ex-wife had gone to another recovery process, and I think it was, God, I forgot what it was, Smart Recovery. And they don't require you to change your sobriety date, you know, right? It's just, oh, it's a slip or whatever. Well, you know, I got an ego, and I'm thinking, oh, God, it's still 15 years. I like that number. So, you know, I'm talking with my sponsor. I let go of the old sponsor because I reconnected with her, and she pointed me to a women's meeting that I started going to, which became my home group, which was amazing. I met the most amazing women there that I am still very close with today. And then I found the sponsor I have today, and I'm talking with her, and I says, you know, I think I need to change my sobriety date. She goes, well, how come? I said, because I drank. Because, you know, I wanted to lie. I wanted to lie about that stuff. You know, I didn't get drunk. You know, I would have a sip, and here's the alcoholic in me. I'm about to, maybe I'm going to get buzzed. Oh, let me push that off to her. Let her drink that. Oh, my God, how messed up is that? You know what I mean? But, you know, that's who I am. That's what I'm doing. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to change my sobriety date, you know. And so she had gone into the first rehab was sometime in March. And I remember after I dropped her off and I went to some friends of hers house that we would have wine with or whatever. And I remember her giving me a glass of wine. And I took a sip and I'm like, God, I don't want this. And that was sometime in March. And I don't remember the exact date. So I picked April Fool's because I thought I was a fool to lose all that time. Damn it. So my date is April Fool's is because I couldn't remember what day it was in March, you know. And I thought, well, that was a good day. But you know how, I mean, I needed to do that. You know, I needed to be honest about that because I'll tell you, how we do this is honest, open-minded, and willing. You know, that's what I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this woman took me through the steps. I understand that the principles, the spiritual principles, are associated with every one of those steps. Honesty being the first one. I have to admit that I'm an alcoholic. And I believe that God gave me this journey the way that it happened to God in my understanding. Because I have to know that I am truly an alcoholic. Who drinks when they don't want to? I actually pretended to be sick to not go wine tasting because I was afraid to go wine tasting. You know, what alcoholic does that? One who can't say no to drinking. You know? So I have to be honest about stuff, right? I have to have some faith and some hope, and I do. I absolutely do. I developed a relationship with the God of my understanding. I didn't do that the first time. I did the steps. I checked the boxes, but I didn't know that I actually had to develop a relationship to cultivate that. It says in our book, everything's in this book. If you haven't gotten this book, you should get this book. Everything is in there. My sponsor points me that every time. And it says in here, if we fail to enlarge our spiritual life, right? And to, you know, be of service to others, you know, and I didn't do that the first time. And I believe that that was about learning that I need more. I want more than just physical, not drinking. I want emotional sobriety. I want some spiritual sobriety. And I get that from working these steps, from coming to these meetings, from being of service. That's the solution I have today. You know, I understand that courage is not necessarily the absence of fear because I'm still a human being, but that it's having fear, having faith in God, and doing it anyway. And that's my courage, right? Having some integrity, right? Integrity means that, my sponsor gives me all these great things to write down. And it's basically knowing, like, doing what I know is right, whether somebody's looking at me or not. Having some integrity. You know, I've always wanted to be this person, you know, to have some humility. Oh, my God, I didn't get that. I didn't get that. Today, I can say, I could be arrogant. I could be self-righteous. I am certainly impatient. Now, that was a soft one. But, you know, looking at that feeling superior and all those other character defects, holy shit, that was a gift, though. That was absolutely a gift because just like if I never said I was an alcoholic, I would never have to have a solution to change it. So if I don't recognize those character defects and how I behave, I would never need to change that. You know, I would, in the morning, as I'm saying my prayers, I would say some of those character defects to remind myself, and then I might recognize during the day when I'm acting out on those. My sponsor says they don't go away necessarily, but you don't have to participate in them. And the way I don't do that today is I rely on God. In the first thing in the morning, I go through page 86 and 87. Step 3 prayer is my favorite prayer because it reminds me to be relieved of the bondage of self. I came in here, I didn't think I was selfish, self-centered, and self-seeking at all. I helped everybody out. So they like me and I can fit in. You know, I mean, I have to have a sponsor to give me all this information to learn this, you know. And so that humility is, to me, I equate it to the word human. That I'm human. I don't have to beat myself up. You know, I have learned that it doesn't matter what people think about me. It's what I think about myself. And that's what I hated. I hated how I was behaving, and I had to keep drinking more so that I wouldn't feel so bad about keeping behaving that way. I don't have to behave like that today. You know, I can become the person I always wanted to be. You know, I grew up in the 60s. Those hippies, they looked great. There was peace and love. And, you know, I just went down that sex, drugs, and rock and roll for a while. And now I'm actually on this path, I think, to be more of what I viewed them as, which is loving and kind and tolerant, you know. That person that I always really wanted to be, and maybe there are pieces in there, and I think the God of my understanding would have me be. You know, our book talks about being, you know, I think it's this prayer for St. Francis about being an instrument, right, of God's path. And doing those steps it clears away all that crap that blocks that sunlight, you know, from my heart and my head, you know. And so I get to be of service to other people, you know. I get to maybe think about somebody instead of myself and act in that way, you know. My ninth step with my stepdaughter, I mean, I was horrible. I mean, I was a dry drunk. I was not nice. She knew it, you know, but I got to actually sit down with her and say, you know what? I treated you in a way that was disrespectful. I said, you know, mean and not nice things about your dad because of my jealousies. So that I'm sure that affected your relationship. I got to be honest about my behavior and take ownership of that. That was the most amazing thing to me because I wasn't telling her anything she didn't already know. You know what I mean? But I took responsibility. And that's one thing I learned in these rooms, too, is to be responsible. And that I only have to do it for today and I don't have to do it perfectly. So today I have solutions to those fears, those insecurities. I have never felt so comfortable in my skin, ever. You know, and I really, I mean, the sponsor I have today, going through those steps, and we went through the traditions. Right now we're going through the traditions on relationships. Oh, my God. Because you know what? These spiritual principles, they apply in all my affairs. Not just on my drinking, because my drinking was my solution to all the irritable, discontented insecurities I felt. It wasn't my problem. I'm my problem. That thinking, right, that goes on. And today I have a different solution. And I know for me that when I'm really getting squirrely, there's something that I need to enlarge in my spiritual life. And, you know, I'm not one, I wasn't one for wanting to say the word God, but you know what? I love the God of my understanding today. I get down on my knees and I actually, okay, God, I don't know. What is it? What is it that you need from me? What should I be doing? You know, today I know when I call my sponsor and I want to blab about stuff because she got me trained on this. Okay, I'll tell her all the whole situation. Okay, what's my part? What am I doing? You know, instead of saying, what the hell are they doing? I was a blamer. I was a pointer. You know, my first sponsor saying, and then you got all those fingers pointing back at you. I understand that today because my solution and my freedom comes from changing me, not from the people around me. That large and in charge, oh, my God, that's pain. That is pain. But I still have to work on that, you know. And I met the most amazing man in recovery. And here's God's coincidence, you know. We have a mirrored life. You know, we've lived in similar places. We have a similar, you know, sobriety story, having some time, losing time. Our sobriety dates are right near each other, just a year apart. You know, we have commonality. When I think it was about a year before I met him, my sponsor had me write down, what is it that you want in a relationship? You know, this man needs every single one of those. Every single one of those, you know. And I really believe that if you just do your part, you know, God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. It's in this book, you know. It doesn't mean that life isn't without pain. It doesn't mean that it isn't without, you know, shit that I don't want. I don't like this. But you know what? My sponsor says, you know what, Chris? You're going to be okay. You may not like it, but you will be okay. You know, and I've learned to trust. I believe her. I've learned to trust. I'm not a trusting person, you know, maybe because I was doing shit that people shouldn't trust me, you know, but I've learned to trust, you know, one day at a time. And I really, really believe that the biggest part of this for me is the God of my understanding, you know, and developing and cultivating that relationship. And one of the things, and I know I'm coming to the end here, as I got out of my outpatient program is that relationships make my reality. And you know what? My reality today is amazing because the relationships I have are substantial. They fill me up. I came here broken and empty. And today my life is worth living. I would have never asked for the stuff I have because I don't even know what I want. I sure wanted something different. You know what I mean? But if I just do the next indicated step, God will put in my life where it is I'm meant to be. And you know what? I am beyond blessed today. I mean, just beyond blessed. I love these meetings. I used to go to hour and a half meetings and I hated them. Oh my God, I hated them. And my home group became an hour and a half home group. I am in service. I have a sponsor who knows I'm her sponsor. I sponsor women. Oh my God, what an amazing gift that is today to be able to give to others freely what has been given to me. And I never thought I'd know how to do that. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. Holy shit. Now I know God speaks through me, speaks through you, and you know, if I just listen and I share what I have, we connect. And God has put people in my life that go through the same stuff I am, you know, and have that same alcoholic stuff. So I'm grateful that I found the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because I have a life. I have a reason. I have a purpose. All those 9-step promises. I am useful. And I only have to do it one day at a time. So I think I'm at the end here, right? Oh my God, I knew I could talk, but thanks for letting me share. And congratulations to all the people celebrating, because you know what? This is an amazing road. If you just take it one day at a time, breathe, say a prayer, or 1 minute a time, whatever you have to do, but it's amazing. I promise you. Yeah, thanks for letting me share. Thanks for asking me, Bill.